echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a weekly business podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations innovate and grow value in a digital world. Episode 19, Leveraging the Cloud to Avoid Value Gaps. In this episode, we'll discuss how enterprises tackle complex digital challenges and why it is critical to understand customer needs to reduce value gaps with your investments in the cloud. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hood, a digital and business strategist at Google Cloud. Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more about the show, visit us throughout social media and online, all at thatdigitalshow.com. For every enterprise, the phrase digital transformation has become synonymous with change. And although at times the term is probably overused, in most cases, it's fairly easy for the enterprise to tell us what they want to transform. What seems to be a little bit more challenging is for them to explain why. To dive into this in glorious detail is our guest, Lafayette Howell. Welcome, Lafayette. How about you share a little bit about yourself?
Chris, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. My role in the organization, I'm a manager of a group called the Cloud Value Advisors. And I'm based in the central region, and our purpose is to ignite, accelerate, and facilitate winning many of the most strategically important deals across the globe.
Excellent. I'm so glad you're here. This is going to be a really in-depth conversation about transformation. But before we get started, we have a new segment for the show, and I'm going to call it That Digital Download. So real simple, is there anything that you've recently read, listened to, downloaded that you'd like to share with the audience?
I sure would. Actually, it was just last week, as we all know, Coinbase went public with their direct listing. And I was listening to John Fort of NBC's analysis of Coinbase. And something he said that was extremely interesting to me was how a lot of people perceive Coinbase to be just an exchange. And he really brought it to life for me. And frankly, I didn't think of it quite this way, but he says it's a new model for decentralized finance. And he asked us to think of it in a more broad sense. If you think about it, Google started off as a search engine. Amazon started off as a bookseller. And look at us today. So when you think about where a company starts, it's not necessarily where they're going to end up.
I think that is a good way to segue into today's topic. Let's take a high-level look at this. What is value?
Chris, that is the question of the century for digital transformation. Value is what a customer needs to drive their business. Value is not an activity. It is not an event. Value is how you are actually moving the economic needle based on what is important to that customer.
When we were talking earlier this week, you mentioned it really is broken down into three questions: the what, the why, and the how. What's the what?
This is the crux of how I think about it and how a lot of organizations arguably are trying to think about it. So the what is, simply put, what they want to do. So for example, a lot of times you see executives saying, we want to do this, we want to do that, because another organization might be doing it. The challenge with that what, though, is they haven't really asked themselves why they want to do it. And so you get caught up in this cycle of trying to keep up with the Joneses, if you will. You don't necessarily give yourself that deep introspection. And that leads you to oftentimes missteps, wasted money investment, financial investments. And frankly, you don't achieve the success you want to achieve.
We see a lot of organizations that really understand what they want to do. Like you mentioned, they may want to compete with somebody, what's happening in the marketplace, even sometimes what consumers are asking for. So they understand that. But we also see that as they've become more desperate to identify those new digital business models, they also tend to not actually fully implement them.
That's exactly right. And let's dive into that, because this is where it gets deeply fascinating. So when you think about it, let's just take a Peloton, for example. We see them, you know, around Christmas holiday season or throughout the year. And that's the what. I want a Peloton. Now, the challenge is, what does it take to actually use the Peloton? What does it actually take to see the outcomes and impacts? And so those deep behavioral changes, those questions you have to ask yourself, tend to not oftentimes be asked at the executive levels. Or if they are, there's not that level of humility and candor and honesty about, can we actually do this? Do we have the internal capabilities to do this? Do we have the collective will? Oftentimes, groupthink kicks into play. You have a lot of organizational bias. There's a lot of companies often who tend to claim victory well in advance before they actually have done anything. So a lot of times, the what and chasing that what obfuscates the ability to understand why they're doing something.
If we were to relate this back to the cloud, I think that dives into the same example, which is organizations know they have to be innovative, yet they struggle with connecting the technology in a way that helps them to innovate. I think one of the challenges that organizations are often faced with is not necessarily the external desire or the unmet need a customer has to engage with you and your products in a certain way. It's actually the internal conflicts of the organization between what they believe they need to do and what people are asking them to do.
That's right. And to further dive into that, the alignment of that business and technology is absolutely essential. For example, we're seeing this right now with the current customer I'm working with, where the existing leadership team have been in place for quite a long time. They brought in a new chief digital officer whose remit is to move fast and to move furious. And the disconnect has actually happened. The new chief digital officer has been able to show some real business impact in a very short period of time. Conversely, the native IT organization hasn't been able to show that. And so they see a lot of money going out, they being the senior executive team, without necessarily a lot of money coming in. That's where the internal baggage and sort of those internal family issues have to be addressed. Otherwise, you just have a lot of misstarts. You have a lot of wasted money in the process.
We've also seen just a complete challenge in terms of what an organization's mission is. So for an example, I was talking with a customer recently who said, we want to be the most innovative company within our segment. I was like, great, I love it. My perception of that comment was they wanted to be innovative as it relates to technology in digital implementation. Their version of that was that the existing products that they manufacture, produce, support, they wanted to be innovative with, and it had nothing to do with technology.
What I love about that comment, Chris, is that you see a level of desperation with your, let's say, your larger, more established enterprises. And what that desperation does, it oftentimes doesn't give folks inside a chance to mobilize and really get clear on where they want to go. For instance, I've seen this at a large global discrete manufacturing company where they are very successful at selling their particular product, but they've been tasked by the senior leadership team to find digital revenue, bring in digital revenue. As a result of that, they're essentially floundering and frankly scrambling to try to find a way to go digital. The challenge with that is that their sales staff, their internal accounting, all the mechanisms that you need to have in place to actually become a truly digital organization are not there. There's a piece out in the information that just came out talking about the shift to consumption-based cloud models create new challenges. And some of those traditional ways in which we sort of evaluate revenue is now becoming more difficult with cloud-based consumption. So you're starting to see a level of maturity that must happen in order for these companies to actually achieve what they want to achieve. And so it's tough. So there's a learning curve combined with this legacy culture that they have to overcome.
I think this is a great way to begin talking about the why. I see oftentimes also this fear of moving to the cloud, this fear of technology, really. You would think we've passed that. We still are seeing this hesitation towards moving into the cloud or hesitation to transform an organization's product strategies, identity. Why is that happening?
The why is where I like to spend a lot of my time. And the why is the hardest question to answer. And you can use certain terms, you can use certain words. You know, we want to increase sales, we want to dominate the competition. That's not really the why. And the why is more about what happens after we dominate the competition. What happens after we increase sales 30% year over year? Have you actually achieved the why? What business are you in terms of how you're serving customers in a different, unique way? One of the challenges about the why is that the why often brings up deeply held patterns and internal trauma, if you will, that the organization might have experienced. For example, let's say something didn't go well 5, 10, 20 years ago. Or let's say there's a lot of worry about cannibalizing a certain business unit. For instance, with AMC, I could imagine a time when in the near future where people actually rent out and people actually stream their own content. They literally go online, pick whatever it is. They want to watch Rocky, or if they want to watch Return of the Jedi, they will actually be able to do that, as opposed to this idea of having 4, 8, 12, however many number of screens. And if you got 5 people watching one movie versus 50 people watching what they want to watch and having the experience they want to watch, it's a win-win proposition. So that why becomes important. So now what we're doing is the revenue increase is an outcome. The why is we're providing people a relevant, high-value, wonderful experience.
I love the example of AMC, obviously, because I'm a movie geek. And I've had similar ideas floating through my head in terms of how movie theaters can transform to accommodate the changes that we're seeing within the marketplace and technology. It reminds me of the great story of Blockbuster, which may answer our why. Blockbuster went out of business because they basically refused to transform. The why was, you have to. This is no longer an option. You must change your business model or you're going to go out of business. And we see that in a lot of different types of industries. One other industry that comes to mind is banking. I know I have a son, he's 13 years old. He has no concept of walking into a bank to deposit a check. The belief that brick and mortar banks are going to be able to sustain a culture where there's no longer people going to a bank is the why. Things are changing so drastically that you have to accommodate those changes or you're simply going to go out of business.
That's right. When I think about banks, I think about the core premise. How can I access capital? And some of the great work that we're doing in the Cloud Value Advisory team is to take that posture where we look at the different personas. We actually go on a journey with that customer and figure out if they want to access capital, does it require you to drive and sit down and make an appointment with someone? Or could you do that at work? Could you do that in the bed at home? Could you do that sitting out on the patio? Could you do it sitting in your car from your phone? And if you meet the criterion, your credit score is what it is, and all the other attributes, you can access your capital. So the idea of having to have real estate to go to a bank to access capital is quickly going the way of the dinosaur.
We've talked about a couple of companies already that I think have seen success by making this transition to the cloud. But weird as it seems, that's only a small fraction of the organizations that are out there, the enterprises that have found success moving to the cloud. Now, do you think that might scare people, other organizations that are trying to make this same journey, and they look at it and they say, well, it's hard, and so they don't want to do it?
Of course. As the saying goes, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. Here's the thing, and here's why I get up every day and what's exciting. And I must say, the women and men that I work with at Google get up every day for this common mission, which is to figure out what is going to add value to the customer. So a lot of these organizations fail oftentimes, or should I say, they don't necessarily capitalize fully on their investments because they actually don't have the why figured out. But let's assume they do have the why figured out. oftentimes what happens is they run out of faith in the strategy. It's not producing fast enough. It's not bringing in revenue quickly enough. There are all kinds of nuances that keep people from actually taking advantage of it. But one of the biggest things, and this is where it gets really interesting. For example, there are some industries that collect virtually 100% of their data, yet they only use about 1% of that data. And in many cases, the data that they have, they're still using it in archaic ways. They're doing extracts. They're putting it into a spreadsheet. They're doing pivot tables rather than figuring out how can we use this to actually make higher quality decisions and, for instance, do scenarios to be able to do what if analysis in a way that's robust, relevant, and impactful.
This is a very common theme. I've talked with people before that say the same thing. We've got data. We don't know what to do with all the data. And one of the suggestions I make is, why don't you expose the data? Why don't you package it and monetize it in some way? And there's an immediate fear, like, no. It's our data. We can't expose this. We can't give it away. We can't monetize it because then people will be able to use it against us. But believe it or not, we're actually seeing trends that if you work with your competitors, you will actually make more compelling digital experiences for your consumers. And it goes back to that conversation about innovation. You'll be able to innovate quicker, easier, more robustly, and your consumers will want to engage with you more. It may sound contradictory, but the fact is, we see consumers engaging with data, even when that data is coming from competitors within that marketplace.
Yeah. So think about this. The oil and gas industry does the same thing. The idea of extracting, searching, exploration, trying to find oil. They all use pretty much similar data, seismic data, geophysical data. And the idea of co-opetition or cooperation, should I say, is now beginning to emerge. They have this platform called the OSDU, Open Subsurface Data Universe. One of the challenges here, though, is that once you have this type of platform with all this rich data, now how do you exploit it? And so one of the challenges that we're beginning to see now is that the skills to actually exploit this data are in short supply. So as they've come together and figured out how to actually bring data together, since we're all pretty much using the same thing, how do we take full advantage of it? And that's where you're starting to see the winners and, if you will, the laggards in the industries.
To me, it still falls back on a consumer that wants to engage with that service, that product, that data. Outside perspective, I always call the outside-in perspective for organizations is challenging. It's challenging to think, I want to know what my consumers want so that I can build it, when often egos get in the way and it's, I already know what my consumers want, so I'm going to just build what I think they want. Maybe the other why that we're talking about is because consumers expect it or they're demanding it. And if you're not meeting those demands or reaching for those expectations, they're going to go off and find another product or service or data that fulfills their needs.
That's right. And, you know, it's funny, you actually stole my words. They will find someone who can meet their needs. And what's even more interesting about that, what I have seen over the last probably 20, 25 years is a lot of your more mature enterprises believe fundamentally that they actually know more than the customer. Despite research groups, focus groups, despite all this data, there's still this idea that we know better. It's very similar to a sports organization where the general manager is also the coach or trying to be the coach and not letting the coach actually do what they do best, which is manage the troops on the field. And I think when you look at organizations and you think about how do we actually bring customers what they want, you have to get out of your comfort zone and you have to say, I don't know what I don't know.
I can't tell you how much I agree with that. Believe it or not, about 5 years ago, I said in an interview, if you believe you know more about what your customers want than they do, you're going to lose those customers. And I think it's critical to really put that ego aside, look at things from an outside-in perspective, get a really strong understanding of your customers' needs and begin to build the products and the services and the data in the way that they want to engage with it. I found a 2020 report called The State of the Connected Customer. And here are a couple of stats for us. 68% of consumers expect brands to demonstrate empathy. 52% of consumers expect experiences to always be personalized. And 66% of customers expect companies to understand their needs. So with these in mind, what tips can you share with the audience to help them determine what their why is?
One of the first things is to get a clear picture of who your customer is. And one of the ways to do that is obviously through data, being able to track their online presence, being able to understand their movements are all attributes, obviously, that many people relate to Google. And I think one of the opportunities there, too, is how can you do that with speed and agility? Because one of the challenges now is we don't have time in business for 18-month product cycles. Maybe in the auto industry, that'll work. But for the most part, in other sectors, you can't wait 18 months. You can't wait 12 months. If you look at your phone, your computer, you're getting updates every 2 or 3 months. It's the same way in fashion. It's the same way in food and retail. So you got to stay current. And that's where the opportunity is. And that's where technology becomes a big factor, because now you can optimize, you can roboticize certain things. You can actually automate those capabilities and bring products to market faster.
Now, the other day you shared with me an article you found. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, it's a great article. It's done by the World Economic Forum, and they took some research done by McKinsey. And one of the things that they've identified is that there are 7 value drivers that can enable cloud to deliver more than $1 trillion in economic value. And they broke it down into 7 value drivers. Cost optimization, improving business, implementing latest technology is in what they call the rejuvenate bucket. And then you have what they call the innovate bucket, which is growth from new and enhanced use cases, adopting accelerated product development, and leveraging the public cloud. I really want to focus on those middle 3 in the innovate bucket. And there's also in the 3rd bucket, pioneer, which is really pushing the envelope beyond boundaries we may not have seen. One of the opportunities for a lot of companies is to distinguish between the rejuvenate bucket, which focuses on cost optimization and essentially rejuvenating their business. In comparison with the innovate bucket is where Google likes to drive a lot of value. And essentially what we have here is what we call the 3 horizon gap, which McKinsey developed a number of years ago. But now with the rejuvenate, innovate, and pioneer, it's sort of replaced that. One of the opportunities that we have right now is to figure out what do companies want to do when it comes to innovation, driving growth, adopting new product development cycles, and really leveraging the cloud is where we like to play.
How do we do all of this? How do we make it happen?
So the how is actually the part that everyone loves talking about. As you may recall, there was a few years ago where everybody was a web designer. You know, someone would ask you, hey, could you help me build a website? And sure. So everybody is a web designer. And that's where we are in many respects right now. The challenge with that, though, Chris, is a lot of folks are basing their how on success they had 20, 25, 30 years ago doing a certain implementation of a certain software product that worked for them. A lot of the same ways of working, the motions, the teams, now it's fundamentally different. You can do things in small pods. You can do things in iterations. You can use design sprint methodologies to understand, is this going to work with inside of a week, as opposed to waiting 6-7 months and finding out it doesn't work. So the how becomes challenging when you have incongruence within an organization. For instance, you bring in many of the teams from Google to help. They're moving at a certain pace. Customers will often say, hey, I love the work you're doing, but we just can't keep up. So on one hand, you're telling us to go fast. On the other hand, we can't keep up internally. So the how becomes a real balancing act of capability. It becomes a real balancing act of will. And frankly, it becomes a real balancing act of just how you view your operating model in this new world of digital.
It makes me think of a story. I went into a customer and we put together a full plan, like here's what you need to do and here's how you're going to do it and here's the timeline. And we marked it up all on a whiteboard and the audience sat there and they just had these blank stares on their face. And then somebody raised their hand and said, "This is really wonderful, but there's no way we'll ever be able to do any of this." And they just simply were at a loss. The thought process of being able to do a 30, 60, 90 day plan, they said the items that are in the 30 day slot, that's 6 months for us. And what do you say? You have to sympathize on some level, but then on the other side, in 6 months, you're going to be in a completely, entirely different scenario.
That's exactly right. You know, I want to share another example that I think is quite appropriate. When you think about the whole cold chain experience for the vaccine right now, this idea of keeping it at a certain temperature. And in doing some research on this topic in a customer opportunity I was working on, I was beginning to look at foods. And one of the challenges in terms of food spoilage is a lot of the food actually doesn't maintain its temperature in the middle of a shipment. It maintains its temperatures on the outer edges. So when you think about it, and this is to your question, this is where the unmet customer need becomes critical. So the unmet customer need is reducing shrinkage and spoilage in the middle of a shipment, as opposed to just providing a capability to keep stuff cold. Because if you're losing 40% of your shipment, the grower or producer is losing money, as well as the retailer and obviously the end customer. So when you start to think about that unmet customer need, and really drilling down on what is actually needed here, that makes for a much more exciting value proposition.
Yeah, completely agree. Love it. Okay, with that, I think it's actually time for our question of the day. Okay, here's our question of the day. Hello, Chris. In our organization, we often see a lot of discussion about digital transformation, but every initiative seems to go in circles. It also feels at times that the technology leadership and the business leadership are looking at everything differently. How do we get our teams aligned? And is there a way to start over or start fresh? We've covered some of that already today, but Lafayette, what do you think?
First of all, that is arguably the most difficult challenge when you think about digital transformation or any large enterprise change. The absolute first thing you must do is get senior leadership on board and aligned. Without that, you do not pass go, you do not collect $200. Now, assuming you get that, this is an important question. One of the things about how you close that gap, again, as I mentioned, has to do with getting your top leaders aligned. And one of the challenges that we see is often there's a gap between what people say and what people do. So often you have executives who come from other industries who were successful and are successful in their own right. But when they come to a different sector, that same success doesn't necessarily translate. And oftentimes, depending on where one is in their career, they tend to be a little bit more risk averse. They tend to be not as current with certain technologies and, frankly, how the world works. As a result, boards are now becoming more assertive at identifying some of these gaps, especially if the needle isn't moving fast enough. So I think one of the opportunities here is to get out of our comfort zones and look at candidates for certain jobs who can actually get the job done, but also have the emotional intelligence to be able to work well across teams, across organizations, and with competitors, as opposed to taking a sort of my way or the highway approach.
We've mentioned this concept of a value gap. There's actually a definition that I found, and let's see if this works for us. The value gap occurs when the perceived value and an experienced value for a software product don't overlap. It creates a gap between the user's expectations and reality. Is this our definition of value gap?
I think so. And I think it's a well done definition.
Here's a great example. There is an app I recently found called Yumly, and it does something that I have yet to see with any food app. It allows you to, let's say, take a picture of the food item you want, whether it's some radishes sitting on your counter, and it actually recognizes what those are. In addition, you're able to then, it shows you potential recipes for those radishes, and then it automatically adds it to the grocery cart. And it goes one step further. It actually identifies local vendors, specifically Walmart, and in this case, Target also, which will allow you to figure out which one is going to have it and at the price you want. That's the complete experience, not to mention, of course, the recipe. So when you think about something like that, that value gap is being closed because you have an idea and you're actually able to execute on it. With enterprises, you often have what is perceived a big value gap between technology investments and actual value realization. One of the challenges we have right now is that technology is often sold to do infrastructure-related activities. The other part, which is the innovation aspect of it, is often overlooked, or it's not seen as a way to drive value in a timely manner. What they're actually looking for in many cases is, how do we grow our top line? And that's often where the conflict begins, both internally and with partners and with cloud providers like Google. By contrast, in order for companies to actually innovate and drive new top-line revenue, they have to change ways of working. And thus, the value gap often remains because you can't get the old ways of working to translate into a new way of doing business.
If we take a look at the World Economic Forum report you covered just a moment ago, they listed the 7 areas where cloud can provide value for an organization. But I was thinking about it, and I actually think I have a simpler way for us to remember this, which brings all of our conversations together. And it's an acronym too, so I love it. Here we go. First is NOW. Implement technologies your customers are asking for right now. And the cloud can help with today's business insights and intelligence. Second one, optimize. Modernize your applications, infrastructures, and in return, your products and services. The cloud can drive continuous improvements for your business. Grow the business, scale technologies, save money. The cloud can provide a deeper understanding of your business. Accelerate product development, get to market faster. The cloud can be a catalyst for what's next. And protect, improve business resilience, navigate disruption, keep up with market trends, cybersecurity. The cloud can protect your future. So if we take those, NOW, optimize, grow, accelerate, and protect, we have no gap.
Chris, I love it. What I like about what you have here, though, it really does reflect a lot of the areas in the work done by the Economic Forum that was prepared by McKinsey. When you think about it, for instance, the idea of protecting and business resilience, those are table stakes for companies, and many organizations have that in place or they're evolving to do that. One of the areas that's truly exciting for us at Google Cloud is the idea of growing the business and accelerating products. As you think about that, if you can grow the business and accelerate products, you're going to improve the top line. And that's really where the opportunities are for many customers across the globe.
Well, Lafayette, thank you so much for joining. It has been a true pleasure having you, and it's been a wonderful conversation.
Chris, thank you so much for having me, and look forward to the next time.
And thanks to all of you who are listening. If you would like to learn more about the show, or if you have a question that you would like to have asked on an upcoming episode, or maybe an idea for a future topic, find us online at thatdigitalshow.com and join us next week as we have another great conversation to help you grow business value on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.